Hey, welcome back to the Pop Culture Cormdale podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Jeff Wright, one of your regular hosts, and you're with me today as I present to you a special interview with Cap Stewart. Cap Stewart is a name some of you are going to recognize already, but if he isn't someone you're familiar with, let me encourage you to give this episode a listen all the way through. You're going to find out that Cap has been involved in a lot of really cool stuff and a lot of stuff that's really helpful to the church. I have a bit more to say after the interview is over, but let's not waste any more time. Let's get into it with Cap Stewart. Hey guys, I am here with Cap Stewart, and we are getting ready to talk about his new curriculum named Sex and Cinema, a new approach for Christian engagement with a pornified culture. Cap is one of these guys that I have become friends with online, I think after we launched the podcast. And so this is my first conversation with you that doesn't involve typing stuff into a window, man. It's good to talk to you.
That's right. Well, thank you so much for the privilege of being on the podcast.
Oh, we're delighted to have you. Cap, can I start off here? This will help me and our listeners too. Where did the Cap name come from? Is that short for something longer, or are you Captain America and we just outed your secret identity?
Yeah, I'm going to have to play the fifth on that one. Sorry. So Cap is on my birth certificate, and actually my grandfather's name was Casper while he was growing up, but he got teased a lot. So his family just started calling him Cap for short. And for whatever reason, my parents thought, hey, we'd like that name. So that is not a nickname. It's actually my real name.
Awesome. I am a big fan of distinctive and traditional name. So I think you're blessed with both the nickname and the original.
Definitely.
Well, help, if you don't mind, help our listeners get to know you a little bit better. You know, where do you come from? What do you do with your vocational life? How were you converted? Could you just kind of sketch out a detail for us there on your bio?
Sure, definitely. I can give you a brief overview there. And I grew up in Southern California, and actually was at the U.S. Center for World Mission, where my father worked, and where we just lived around a lot of missionary kids and grew up in that kind of community. And very, very grateful for that and the friends that I developed there. And then in 93, was transplanted to East Tennessee, and that took quite a while for me to adjust. But now the East is home, and our family is here, our church is here, my work is here, and I've grown accustomed to being here. So I guess I'm technically from here now. And then as far as my conversion goes, I have spent most of my life under the assumption that I was converted at an early age because I made a profession of faith. Our pastor at the church we were going to at the time felt that it was genuine, so I was baptized. And so growing up, I did grow up in the church, which I'm very thankful for. But just a lot of my Christian walk was definitely defined by legalism, really. It was just my life with God was one based on duty, and it wasn't delight. And it was just this huge struggle of trying to obey without that delight in God being a component. And so the older I get, the more I think I actually was not converted until 2000, when I went to a Christian conference, you know, was under the assumption that I was saved, wasn't looking to get saved, wasn't asking for that kind of help because I thought I was already there, and was just listening to a very simple message where the speaker was going through the story of Mary and Martha, and Mary sitting at the feet of Jesus, Martha doing all her work. And he just had two simple points: that God is our treasure when his word is like our soul's bread, and God is our treasure when his presence is like our soul's oxygen. Very, very simple, but just something happened during that message and the music portion afterwards. There was just a radical change in my heart, and I was a different person. And because I am charismatic, I mean, I'm predominantly Reformed, but also charismatic. So I was under the assumption at that point, well, this is a baptism of the Holy Spirit. This is something new and great. And now just from several years past that, I really think that actually was when I was genuinely converted for the first time, because I went from God being a duty, pursuing him to being a duty. Whereas at that point, he became a delight and a treasure and a joy. And so I'm just grateful for his mercy to save me when I didn't even think I needed saving. So that's just kind of a brief overview of how he brought me to himself in spite of myself.
Praise the Lord, man. That gets me fired up listening to that. He is a good God, man. We are.
Indeed.
We're in the care of a good shepherd.
Absolutely.
So then, Cap, obviously you're a guy interested in bringing your faith to bear on what we, you know, what around these parts we call pop culture, that specifically tends to refer, for us anyway, to movies, TV shows, popular music, books, stories. So how did that connection take place for you? How did you start thinking as a Christian about the media you were consuming and encountering?
You know, for most of my life, I've been interested, especially in movies. And I think a lot of it had to do when our family got a camcorder way back in the day when, you know, that was a thing, and they were kind of big and clunky. And I was a designated camera person, not really by force. It was by choice. I loved doing that. And I was just enamored with cinematography and placing the camera and doing different angles and different tricks to do stuff to imitate what they were doing in movies. And so that has never changed. I love the visual arts in particular. And so just growing up, loving the visual arts and loving visual stories in particular, and just really enjoying that medium. And so I actually went into video production, went to school for cinema and video production, and have spent most of my vocational career in that realm, in media in some form or fashion, even though I don't really do a whole lot of that now, but that's just been a huge part of my life. And so it's hard to even think back at a time when I wasn't interested in movies. I've always enjoyed that medium.
Okay, fascinating. So I definitely came to this arena as a consumer, but you came in as a creator. That's excellent. I don't know that you're going to publish any of this, but have you, is there stuff out there that has your creative fingerprint on it? You know, short films, videos, commercials, anything like that? Again, I'm not going to try to like track them down or, you know, put links to them up, but I'm just curious if any of that's out there.
Sure. There is a little bit out there. Probably the biggest project, I mean, not even biggest from a technical standpoint, but just from a personal accomplishment standpoint, back when I was a student studying film, a friend and I partnered together to do a documentary on a local family that had gone through a really serious trial, and the father had written a book about it. So we interviewed them, and it went way beyond the scope of what the course was designed to include, where it was like this 45-50 minute documentary that ended up actually, just due to various and sundry connections, we premiered it at our local theater. And so it showed several times back when Carmike was still, you know, by itself. We had a Carmike theater and showed the movie several times over the weekend, and raised money for a local charity. And it was just it was in the newspaper and everything. And so it is on IMDb. It's just a movie called A Weakness Worth Boasting. And so he and I produced that. And so that's probably the biggest thing. I've had my hand in some other independent films where I was just a random, whether it's an extra or just, you know, being on set, helping with various and sundry duties. But A Weakness Worth Boasting is probably the main project that you would find associated with my name online.
Okay. Well, fascinating. I told you I wouldn't link to it, but I'm definitely going to go stalk that out and check it out.
Hey, it's out there, so feel free to look it up. Sure.
Okay. Well, one last kind of introductory question, because again, we're talking about pop culture. Any particular stories in whatever medium, particular creators, particular characters that you have a longstanding relationship with or fascination with?
You know, I, even though visual medium is kind of my main area of enjoyment, I also do like reading. And back when I was, I was 9 or 10, I picked up a copy of Frank Peretti's book, This Present Darkness, and read that. And ever since then, I've just been captivated by speculative fiction, especially sci-fi in particular. And so I do like to read. I've read a lot of Michael Crichton growing up, and of course, Frank Peretti as well. I've read most of his books. And so they definitely have a very nostalgic emotional connection to certain writers like Frank Peretti or Michael Crichton in particular, and love that particular genre.
Okay. Well, I actually, those were early connection points for me too, as I was growing into adulthood. And I don't know that any book kind of transformed my understanding of what the faith could speak to the way this Present Darkness did. You know, I come from a different tradition than you do. And so like some of the stuff that Peretti's writing there, I'm going to quibble with theologically.
Right.
But just the...
And I would too, yeah.
Sure, that makes sense. Nonetheless, I'm so grateful that he told a story that was built on assuming what the Bible said about the world is actually true, and told a really compelling version of that story. So.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, if we can switch gears just a little bit, because what we're here to talk about is this new curriculum you're offering to the church. By way of introduction, I read the title earlier, but I'm gonna do it one more time here to make sure our listener has it fresh in their mind. So, the curriculum you're offering is Sex and Cinema: A New Approach for Christian Engagement with a Pornified Culture. And I guess the way I'd start that conversation is, I think this is super timely. I don't know how much time you spend on Twitter. But there are some very prominent conservatives, and that, you know, some of that's political conservatives, some of that's theological conservatives, some of that's both.
Right.
They are talking online very seriously about the question of whether or not the government should regulate porn distribution and consumption, because people, it seems, are becoming much more aware that this is a public health crisis. And I'm talking about that from a secular point of view. You are stepping into a world that seems well prepared to look for resources to kind of navigate this pornified world we've created for ourselves.
That's right. It does seem, because I believe God has been in this whole process of me focusing on this very narrow aspect of visual stories. And whenever I write about this topic in particular, that is definitely where I get the most engagement. And a lot of people respond, whether it's with agreement or disagreement or just constructive criticism or whatnot. But it's just that there does seem to be kind of a need for us to delve into this more deeply and try to wrestle with, you know, what does scripture have to say about this, and how, and can we, and how should we respond to it?
Well, I'm thankful to hear someone like yourself choosing to work in this arena. I'm a pastor, and years ago, I wish I remember who told me, but years ago, a guy said, stop asking your guys, are you addicted to porn? Are you using porn? Start asking, how much are you using? How regularly are you using? I feel like the church has been aware of this problem, you know, ahead of the broader culture. I think it was in the last presidential election, the Republican Party added it to their, that porn was a public health crisis to their platform. But the church has been out there for a while saying this is a problem. But I also don't know that our lead has given us a lot of advantages. I feel like porn is eating the church's lunch in a lot of different ways, particularly among men.
Right. I think that's true.
So why then, if we're going to try to bring the resources of the kingdom of Christ to bear on this this porn crisis, why do we need to start doing that by thinking about the stories we're consuming in visual medium like film and television?
Right. Well, when it comes to pornography in particular, I think that even though we as the church have a lot of room to grow in how we address it, and whether it's trying to be, you know, too cool and too hip and too frank, or just not talk about it at all, I think that the church does have a pretty good stance on, hey, this is pretty clearly against scriptural teaching. This isn't something we can take on a case-by-case basis. Is this appropriate or not? Like, it's just flat out wrong. It's flat out immoral. And so there are a lot of voices in the church saying that, which is good. One of the reasons, anyway, why my focus is more narrow on the pornification of culture and other areas where we might not readily recognize it is Well, I guess it's for that very reason, because we live in a pornified culture, and how porn, you know, we have food porn and wedding porn and car porn. And we use that term to describe obsessions or just enjoyment of different areas. It has infiltrated so much of our media and our just pop culture in general, that I think to a large degree, we become numb to it and unaware of just how much it has affected things. And so we become accustomed to certain areas where, you know, even just a couple decades past, folks would look at that and say, oh my goodness, that's pornographic. And we just barely blink an eye. And so I think there is definitely a need for Christians to address kind of that bleed or that crossover between, you know, genuine art and blatant pornography. And we need to address more of where those areas intersect and be more discerning there, because it's more subtle and we've become too accustomed to it.
Well said. So there's a whole bunch of stuff about your curriculum I want to highlight. But before we get into some of my specific questions about it, can you give our listeners just maybe a 2 or 3 sentence summary? It can be longer if it needs to be, but just a summary of what your curriculum is and what its aims are.
Yes, yes. I can take like a minute or two, if that's okay, just to give that brief, broad overview. So my experience itself, not just for me, but just within my Christian circles growing up, it seems that the church has done a pretty good job of emphasizing the importance of the first and greatest commandment when it comes to engaging with pop culture, and that is love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And so when we look at something, we think, okay, is this appropriate for me? Is this going to be a stumbling block for me? How will this affect my heart or my mind or the lives of my family members? Because we want to make sure we honor God and keep our mind and thoughts and hearts pure and not be defiled by worldly contaminants. And so that is a great, great concern, and we should not ignore that. But I think it's too limited, because there's also a second commandment, which Christ mentioned, which is love your neighbor as you love yourself. And when we evaluate our entertainment choices, I think that commandment has been largely ignored in the body of Christ. And so that's where I want to bring more attention to, as I was made aware of this several years ago by other great men of the faith who have helped me see this. I realized, you know, that we need to focus on love your neighbor as you love yourself. And the neighbor that we tend to forget often, especially when we're thinking about pornified content, is the actors who are being asked and in many cases coerced or pressured or intimidated into performing these acts or undressing for the camera. Like, we're not even considering their needs as a human being, as being made in the image of God. And we need to focus more on our Christian duty toward them.
Well, that is exactly what I think is so fascinating about this project you're doing in two ways. So correct me if I'm wrong, but having been afforded the opportunity to look through this in advance, the thing that I think you are uniquely addressing is, first, you are not saying it's the stuff that, if it were rated, would be rated with an X. That Christians need to be intentional about how they engage. So there's a lot of stuff that's sold under labels that make it look much more mainstream, that are nonetheless under the category of sexually explicit in pornographic fashion material. And, you know, again, as a pastor, I have a pretty young congregation. We're in a university town. There's probably been no more gateway drug to sexually explicit imagery for the guys I'm running into than Game of Thrones. And you don't have to go to some shady website to watch that stuff. It's one of the most celebrated stories being told in our culture right now. But then also, the other thing you're talking about is that by consuming this stuff, we are contributing to the dehumanization of the people who are involved, and that's not loving them well. And honestly and truly, I had thought about that subject when it came to what we would call hardcore pornography, because human trafficking is so bound up in the porn industry. But I had a mental gap between someone like Jennifer Lawrence doing a nude scene in you know, what we would call respectable cinema presentation, and you've helped me here. So how did you first become aware of, like, we need to be loving these people better as consumers?
Right. Well, I definitely need to give a shout out to pastor and author Wayne A. Wilson, who wrote a book called Worldly Amusements. And I picked it up in our church's bookstore several years ago, finally read it in 2012. And I love the book. I think it's just a phenomenal piece of work, just helping Christians engage with the medium of cinema in particular. But he had one chapter in there called The Law of Love. And it was just one chapter out of the entire book, but he just delved into just a handful of interviews with some actors and mostly actresses who very candidly shared their being either squeamish or bothering their conscience or whatever else when it came to public nudity or simulating sex acts, and talking about, he just talked about our Christian duty to love them, and how our paying for these movies, even if we close our eyes or just grit our teeth and bear and say, oh, well, that was a great movie, it's horrible that I had that one sex scene, we're forsaking their needs as a human being. And I, like you said, I never even thought about that before. It just never even crossed my mind that that was a component that I should be considering. And so in 2012, that's what really got me to thinking. And I think it was within the next year or two where I started to implement his law of love and try to figure out, okay, this movie I'm excited about, oh, wait a minute, there's this one scene that's really short, but you know what? It's dehumanizing, it's objectifying, so I'm not going to pay for it. And that's really what got the ball rolling in my mind, was when I was exposed to this principle through his work and his book.
Okay. Well, so let me ask you how Christians should approach caring for people well when the people involved are very happy to give themselves to what's going on. And so I want to, sure, I just want to put a pin here, because I think one of the things your curriculum does very well is say the people that we see on screen presented as sirens, who are hypersexualized and very sexually aggressive. What turns out behind the scenes is that they're often deeply uncomfortable and, you know, they don't desire to be involved, but they feel like they need to. So
that is an
incredible strength of your curriculum. I'm trusting some of our listeners are going to buy the curriculum and engage with it. I guess I'm thinking of something like Jennifer Lawrence, who is present in your curriculum.
Right.
She had nude photos leaked against her will. And I read an interview with her who said, you know, in that she said, I wanted to reclaim the sexual presentation of my body. So she went and made a movie where she presented herself to the cameras nude in sexual encounters. It seems ridiculous coming to that as a Christian, that basically your response to people preying upon you is giving them more material to prey on you with.
Right.
But nonetheless, this is obviously an act of her will. And so how do you think through loving someone who is happy to give themselves to these degenerative presentations? Does that make sense?
Right. Oh, no, it totally does, because I try to make clear in the course that even though we're focusing on instances of coercion and intimidation, which are prevalent in the industry, it isn't exclusively the experience of everyone. There are some folks who think, oh, this is just a big challenge, like jumping off of a bridge with for bungee jumping or just like working out to build up for the scene or whatever. And there are others who actually enjoy those types of scenes. So yeah, it's not a universal experience where everyone hates it. So there are some folks who do seem fine with it, or at the very least just see it as a challenge. And so in those cases, and I don't delve into this with a whole lot of specificity in the course, but it's kind of, I guess what I've come to is it's kind of beside the point whether they are for it or against it or not, because the biblical stance is that all forms of immorality are inherently unloving. And, you know, when Paul, I can't remember the specific passage where he's talking about the summary of the law as, you know, loving your neighbor. And he lists a few examples of, here are examples of not loving your neighbor. And one of them is do not commit adultery. And so loving your neighbor is summed up as don't do harm to your neighbor. If you harm them, then you've done wrong. And he's not saying that all forms of immorality are coercive. Like there's a lot of sexual immorality, whether it's adultery or fornication or whatever else, that is very willing between two consensual adults. And the Bible says, you know, that's still unloving. Like you are doing damage to yourself and to that person, to your marriage, to that marriage. Like there's nothing loving about that. It's still damaging. And so whether these actors who are committing these immoral acts are fine with it. From my standpoint as a Christian, I still shouldn't be encouraging them in that, because that's just inherently wrong, just as pornography is inherently wrong. And so my goal needs to be loving them, even if my love toward them wouldn't be received from them as love. And one example I've drawn attention to before is Potiphar's wife and Joseph. You know, Joseph loved, among other people, Potiphar's wife really well by refusing her advances, and she got pretty ticked off at him. You know, so it's not, sometimes the way that we love people might be very contrary to how they would want to be loved or think that is right to be loved. But I think from a Christian perspective, whether they're for the sex scene or against it, I think the loving response is to say, you know, I can't encourage you in that because that is doing damage to you and the others around you you're interacting with.
Sure. So you would liken it to, say, loving a family member who has a drug addiction. They may desperately want the fix that they're, you know, addicted to, but it is not an act of love to, you know, provide them the substance that's killing them. Is that fair?
Right, to enable them to continue that. I think that's a pretty good analogy, sure.
Yeah, okay. Well, so one of the things that I'm really impressed with reading through your curriculum is the amount of research that you put into it and how many specific examples you drew, not just from movies and TV, but even from like theater. So how long, you know, estimate, right. How long were you researching this?
Well, you know, honestly, I've been writing about this both for my blog and then different magazine articles and online publications since about 2014 or so.
Okay.
And so over that time, I've been slowly collecting just a wealth of information from various magazine articles and other interviews and just compiling those. And so just over the years, I've compiled a hefty amount of information. And so when it finally came time to put the course together, I had more than enough. And there were several situations that I thought, oh, this will be a perfect fit. And I ended up not being able to use it for whatever reason. So there's plenty of information out there to refer to. And I just had to actually limit what I cited and quoted because there is so much.
Okay. Well, so that, does that mean there's a director's cut of the curriculum eventually coming out?
Well, Lord willing, the goal would be for me to publish an entire book on this. I did publish an essay on this in a book called Cultural Engagement earlier this year, released by Zondervan. And I did just one essay out of dozens of essays in the book, but it focused on this topic in particular. So, you know, I've done an essay, now I've done an online class, and Lord willing, my plan would be eventually, whether it's in a year's time or longer or whatever the case may be, to actually do this in book form and take a lot of this course material and then even add to that and have a book length treatment of the subject.
Okay. Well, we will look forward to that version and pray that the Lord brings it to pass.
Right.
So speaking of your research, there's a story. I don't want to give too much away, but I think this will be an appetizer for our listeners. You tell a story, I think, of it's not a married couple. They're like long-term dating relationship. And I believe the male in the relationship is a theater actor. And basically his lover comes to watch him perform on stage. And I guess there's a sex scene in the play. And she notices that she recognizes in his portrayal things that she felt sort of a proprietary or personal ownership of because they were part of their sex life and that it sort of created a crisis among them. And so one of the things that reading your curriculum has done for me is that, it reminded me, I need to be thinking about the actress, or at least it tends to be the actress who's being asked to present their body sexually.
Right.
But it also helped me realize the kind of relational and emotional cost in some of these things. Mm. Even as it seems really obvious as a Christian who is committed to monogamy that, of course, you can fake murder in a stage production, right? But it's a lot harder to fake sexual attraction, arousal, things like that. So that was eye-opening to me, and it cultivated sympathy and empathy within me. Mm-hmm. Was there anything like that for you as you went through the process where you felt like your own eyes were opened or opened further?
That definitely was a component that did stick out to me. And, you know, that story you mentioned, I think that's probably the only story in the course that delves into that particular aspect. Now, I do have several other stories of other actors who share, like, you know, here's how, whether they're, you know, married to each other, and here's how we deal with the sex scenes we go out and do with other folks. But it's not an insignificant aspect that actors have to deal with, because it does intrude on their personal and marital relationships. And it's, you know, it's not a welcome intrusion in many cases. And I don't think it's a biblically justifiable intrusion in any case.
So let me ask you, on the other side of this,
sure.
What would you say to the person who hears us talking here and basically hears it as work that no one has enough time to do, right? So the person who says, I don't have time to suss out whether or not this person or that person had good motives or bad motives, if they were coerced or if they volunteered for this stuff.
Right.
So I can't really use your approach. What would you say to that person?
On the spot question there. I would, part of it would probably be to reiterate one thing we've already talked about, is that whether they, you know, were coerced or not, let's come at this from a biblical perspective, and mm-hmm. can and should we encourage them in that if it is inherently immoral? So I think that would be a part of it. I had another aspect of the answer that just flew out of my mind.
Well, I've got a follow-up that'll maybe
jog. Okay, sure. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Is it safe to just say we can assume, because we know that the Lord does not approve of, you know, visual presentations of sexuality outside the context of a marriage, that whatever right. their motivations are, drawing on what you said earlier, whatever their motivations are, you know, you don't have to do the research. You can know the Lord does not approve right. of this thing. Therefore, it is not good for this person. Therefore, I just shouldn't be feeding the beast that's driving the system that asks a woman or a man to present themselves in a God dishonoring way. Would that be a fair
right.
conclusion to summarize your point with?
I think that is, and thank you for the follow-up, because that did jog my memory. So I think that is a good summary. And another aspect of that would be just to address the idea that, okay, motives are important. You know, the Bible talks about motives. You can do the right thing for the wrong reason, and so that's still the wrong thing. You could even do the wrong thing for the right reason, that's still the wrong thing, and only the right thing for the right reason is the right thing. But when it comes to this aspect of displaying immorality, whether it's a simulated sex act or sexualized nudity in particular, that is inherently exploitive. It's inherently pornographic, and you can't redeem pornography and make it. But like, there's just no way to redeem pornography to where, oh, well, now it's acceptable because after we watched them had sex, they both felt guilty and they prayed a sinner's prayer, and it was a powerful demonstration of them getting saved, and now they're not going to do that anymore. But like, you can't say, well, now the pornography is redeemed because there was a salvation scene at the end. Like, it just, there's no way to redeem an inherently exploitive process. And so that would be a part of it too, is just that, like, motives are important, yes, and there are directors in the industry who genuinely, and you know, they aren't professing Christians, they don't see that there's a problem with using this kind of content. They're just trying to tell a story. Like, I willingly can see that is a component to many stories told. And then there are others that their intentions are, they're devious and salacious. And so the motive, while it's not unimportant when we're dealing with an inherently flawed process, there is a sense in which the motive is moot because, again, the wrong thing for the right reason is still the wrong thing, and the ends can never justify the means.
Okay, well said. Well, thank you for that. So you are offering this curriculum, you know, for the church's benefit. And we've talked a little bit about, you know, maybe someday a book or previous work you've done where you're putting essays and books, you know, on a similar theme. As you're offering this to the church, who are you hoping will go through this curriculum? How do you hope they'll use it? And what do you hope the Lord will do through it?
Well, you know, I probably, my target audience is closest to people who are like me this content that I have created really is content based over my own research over the last several years as I have sought myself to grow. So I know that in a pornified culture that sexual lust is a real issue. And so one particularly large demographic I would like to help would be those who are struggling with sexual lust and just finding that they're not really totally and fully able to just kick this sin to the curb. And not that that's going to be completely possible until, you know, the other side of heaven, but to be able to be more consistently victorious in their lives. And I think that, again, this is a very narrow topic. There are so many other areas when you're addressing sexual lust, but as with lust or anything else, if there's a foothold you have in your life and you're ignoring it either willingly or just because you're ignorant of it, there's only so much victory you can have. And I think because this is so socially acceptable and so overlooked, that a lot of folks are shooting themselves in the foot by trying to defeat lust and then applying what is ultimately, and I think unintentionally, a self-centered paradigm for evaluating movies is like, how does this affect me? And all I'm thinking about is me, and is this going to be a bother for me? Which again, isn't bad, but it can inadvertently just encourage us to continue to focus inward and then just to focus on ourselves and not consider other people. And a huge aspect of beating lust is the overcoming power of love and from looking inward to looking outward. And then even just moving beyond lust, just overall, the entire Christian life is designed to be based on those two great commandments: love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And if we can, by God's grace, grow in those areas, that'll just have a huge impact on our personal lives and on our marriage relationships and on our parenting and on our interactions with our friends and our and strangers on the street and our media consumption and everything. So I don't know if it's too lofty a goal to say, I just hope that this helps those within the church love their neighbor as they love themselves more effectively, and that's focusing on this one area will spill over into their other relationships and other interactions. And I think it can have that effect because I've experienced that effect in my own life as well. So to fight lust would be a big goal to help people to be able to fight that more effectively, and also just to love their neighbor as they love themselves.
Okay. So yeah, of course, again, I'm a pastor, love the local church. I know you do too.
Right.
It looks to me that this is the kind of study that someone can grab their laptop, log in, and go through on a personal level. But I also think this would be great for, you know, some churches call it community groups, some call it small groups, some Sunday school functions similar in the life of their body. You think this would be useful to a group setting like that? How would you think through the best way for Christians to work through your material?
I do think that would be an excellent context in which people can and should walk through the course. And in fact, in the introductory video, there's an introduction to the course, and it's basically a mini lesson in and of itself. And it's completely free. Anyone who goes to the website can look at that to get a better feel for, you know, here's what the entire course is like. And so in that introductory video, I actually do address the fact that, okay, especially if you're seeking to battle sexual lust, you know, this content deals with sexual themes. And so I've tried very hard to not make this titillating or needlessly explicit. You know, there have been some times and a couple of the lessons where we do have to get kind of frank, but definitely want to keep it more in the kind of the PG-13 realm and below, just so that it's not gratuitous. But I do encourage folks, like, especially if you are trying to battle sexual lust, you know, I would recommend that you lock arms with other people and maybe do this as a group, just because our sin, if we don't shine light on our sin, we're not going to overcome it. And so being able to get accountability and input and help from other people will enable you to more effectively walk through a course like this or material like this, and I think experience more victory and more success in implementing the principles and the practices. And so I do think, and hopefully next year with some local believers here, I'm actually going to try to put together a Bible study group that will go through this course, just so that I can get some more feedback from people within that context, and I can personally experience not only just a refresher of the material for myself, but then also see how does this benefit us in this new context? How is this serving this context? What could I change to maybe make it more effective. But I do think a group context would be a great way to work through the material.
All right, listeners. So you heard that. Here's what happens. Every church, even if you're not Baptist or congregational in polity, everybody defaults to congregationalism at some point. So what you need to do is get this curriculum, go to your pastor, your elder, church staff, and say, how do we use this in the life of our body? I'll tell you, Cap, just as what I mentioned earlier, a guy who has a bunch of young congregants, a lot of pop culture hungry congregants, I think this is going to be really useful for personal discipleship. You know, one-on-one discipleship, an older believer with a younger, I think that there's a real thirst for that. But I also think because it's been crowded out a little bit by programming in the evangelical church. I think some people want to be more involved in one-on-one discipleship, but don't know how to get that ball rolling. And the title you have given to this curriculum invites interest. It assumes a very common ground. And so to those people out there who are doing one-on-one discipleship on either side of the ball or want to do more of it, man, get this curriculum. The people you've already been talking about, Breaking Bad or Game of Thrones or whatever, in your church or in your other environments that are believers, say, well, let's go through this together and talk it over. I think there's tremendous use for this curriculum in that way.
Well, I hope so. It is my hope and prayer that is the case, that it would help foster relationships and community involvement and really be an asset to the church to help with that. And and in part because of, you know, the importance of the local church is huge and sometimes neglected in our kind of parachurch ministry culture. I'm very grateful for my local church, where I have had a couple of my pastors who have been very encouraging with my writing on this, and they have given me feedback and they have read through this course material. And so, just the ability to interact with pastors and other lay people within your local congregation as you're working through this, I think would just bolster the efficacy of the material as it's being thought through and discussed and applied in that local church setting where God has promised to be in the midst of his people.
Hear, hear. Well, so you've been very generous with your time, and I'm very thankful for that, and I trust our listeners are as well. If you would help me out, we need to kind of walk back through some of the stuff that we have mentioned already in terms of helpful material. So I'm going to just throw some of these things at you and tell me where to find it, okay? There was a book you mentioned, and I can't remember the author's name, but you said it was this book by this guy who first got me thinking about loving my neighbor in media consumption. What was that book, and who was that author?
Yes. So the book is Worldly Amusements, and it is, the subtitle is Restoring the Lordship of Christ to Our Entertainment Choices. And so that's a paperback book that has been out since 1999, and that's by Pastor Wayne A. Wilson.
Okay. Thank you. So you mentioned also that you write for various publications and a blog. Where can our listeners find that content? And is there anything you would highlight as a good place to start reading your writing?
Sure. My blog, I've been writing at, it's just capstewart.com. I've been writing there since 2006. So a lot of my just mental process in developing this idea and this material and applying what I learned from Wayne A. Wilson's book is on the blog. And so a large portion of my writing on this topic is there. That probably is a good place to start. And if somebody wanted just a summary article on, like, here's a good broad overview of the entire idea, either the chapter or my essay in Cultural Engagement would be a good place to start. Or I did an article called, it was for Reform Perspective Magazine, and I can double check real quick here. What was the title? It was something like, it said, here's the problem with just closing your eyes during the sex scenes. And that compiled a lot of information from a lot of blog posts. It was kind of a special, where I compiled information over the years, put it all in one article, and we published it at Reform Perspective. And that's a good summary of this whole idea that I've been promoting over the last several years.
Okay. I'm sorry to kind of put you on the spot with that. I feel like when I'm asked
no, you're fine.
That specific question, that's where my brain goes into full rebellion and says, you know, you were about to say it, but now you cannot say it. You mentioned the book Cultural Engagement. Is that the full title? And is that available under a certain editor's name? Can you get it on Amazon? I think this is the book you contributed an essay to. Am I correct on that?
That is correct. Yes. So the entire title is called Cultural Engagement, A Crash Course in Contemporary Issues. And the two editors of that are Josh Tatra and Karen Swallow Pryor. And they had invited me to submit an essay on this topic for inclusion in the Movies and the Arts section.
Okay. Well, I'm going to try to put links to as much of this as I possibly can in the show notes, listeners. So check there if any of this is kind of passed you by and you're not, you know, you're listening to the car and can't write it down or whatever. But really the thing that we're most interested in hoping that our listeners will take a look at is this curriculum we've been talking about, Sex and Cinema, New Approach for Christian Engagement with Pornified Culture. And I know that you can find that at the URL, which, by the way, great URL for this project. So important, man.
Thank you.
The website address is christiansandmovies.com. That is so spot on in terms of relevance, but also easy to remember. So that is christiansandmovies.com, finding Sex and Cinema, A New Approach for Christian Engagement with a Pornified Culture. Are there links out there that people can find easily to kind of redirect this? Like I'm thinking about social media groups or social media sites, anything like that?
I do have a limited social media presence, mostly Facebook and a little bit on Twitter. Other than that, not a whole lot. Most of my work is either on the blog or like you said, the christiansandmovies.com. I was trying to find, like you said, something that would be easy for folks to remember. Certainly wasn't going to do the subtitle of the course as a URL. No one would remember that one. And so hopefully christiansandmovies.com is a good place for folks to be able to go. Either that or my blog really are the two main areas. I mean, I do have a Facebook author page as well, but that usually just directs people back to either capstewart.com or the christiansandmovies.com.
Okay. Well, so listener, here's another way that you can do this. You hear me be entrepreneurial about this, but I really think the curriculum is useful to Christians. So here's the deal. Get some people, you know, y'all watch the, or go through the curriculum together, then create a Facebook group and y'all talk through this stuff in your Facebook group or whatever, or, you know, a DM session on Twitter. Y'all know how to do this. Let's get this done. This is useful stuff. We need to spread it. Cap, just to finish up the talk on the curriculum, I'm going to read for our listeners the summary that they will find when they go to christiansandmovies.com, at least the first paragraph, because I think it's so good. Guys, if we haven't convinced you, you need to check this out. Let me read you this and really go take a look at this and figure out how you can make use of this curriculum. So here's the first paragraph of the summary. In a pornified society like ours, it is impossible to interact with pop culture without being exposed to sexualized content, some of it explicit. When it comes to being a patron of visual stories such as movies, television shows, and theatrical productions, we find ourselves navigating reviews and content warnings in order to determine whether or not a particular piece of entertainment is appropriate to watch. Cap, you know, I know, everybody listening to this knows that is exactly the cultural situation that Christians find themselves in when they want to enjoy the stories that God's image bearers create. And I'm really thankful that you have labored to help us do that well.
Well, thank you so much. I really do hope that it serves folks. It has been a huge means of grace in my life. I am so grateful for discovering these principles and practices and just studying them and learning them. And it has really just radically affected my marriage. It's affected my walk with God. It's affected my ability to interact with pop culture and navigate, I think, more with more discernment and more glory directed to God. So my own testimony is that this works because it's based on, hopefully on, you know, scriptural principles and God's way, and God's way works. And so I am jealous that other people can experience the growth and the freedom that I have as well.
Amen. Amen. May the Lord make it so. So again, Cap Stewart has been our guest here, guys. Find him at capstewart.com. Find this curriculum that you need to take a look at at christiansandmovies.com. Cap, you mentioned you had a limited social media presence. Where can they find you on Twitter or wherever else you prefer to be found?
Right. I do visit Twitter on occasion, and that's just it's just Cap Stewart is my name there.
Okay. Okay. Well, hey, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's been a joy and an honor. And I'm not a huge podcast person, but quite frankly, if I do, it is normally your podcast where I listen to you guys. I mean, you and Jared have this great, I love how you interact. Like if you talked about nothing and it was just musings about you two, about your lives, it would be hilarious to listen to and a lot of fun. So I tune into what you guys talk about because I think it's engaging and also discerning. And so I'm thankful for what you guys do and how you serve the body of Christ with this podcast.
Well, that is very kind of you, sir. You're a gracious listener and I appreciate it. And sort of in the spirit that you described your own work, if we can be useful in any way to the church, we definitely want to be. So thanks for that encouraging word. All right, brother.
Absolutely.
So we're recording this before Christmas. I'm assuming you and I won't speak directly in audio form anyway between now and then. So have a blessed Christmas to you and your loved ones. And thanks again for being on the Pop Culture Cormdale podcast.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
See, wasn't I right? Cap's awesome. He's done great work and he's doing great work. I hope you'll seriously consider my encouragement to go check out his website, take a look at that curriculum, and figure out how you can put it to use in God's kingdom for the glory of Christ. As I mentioned, I think it's super timely. It's going to be super helpful, and I couldn't be more excited about it. You'll notice when you drop by his website that I'm an endorser of the curriculum. That's not because he paid me. It's because I got the chance to look at the material early, thought it was helpful, and was glad to lend my support. So again, check out what Cap's got going on. Look at those resources he talked about. We'll put links to that in the show notes. And let's get out there and push back against some of the darkness that's present in our overly sexualized, overly pornified culture. That's going to wrap us up for this episode of the Pop Culture Cormdale podcast. But we've got some good news. We've got some cool stuff lined up here around the Christmas season and into the new year. We're bringing back some old friends, and I think we're going to have a chance for you to meet a new friend or two. So stay tuned for that. And also, we're expecting Jared Moore to get back in the saddle. He is now officially Dr. Jared Moore. And I threw a movie at him to watch the other day so that we could get on here and give it the old Pop Culture Cormdale podcast treatment. So I'm expecting Jared back sometime soon. So like I said, good stuff coming up, Lord willing. And we appreciate you listening. Keep checking that podcast feed for these new episodes we've got planned. And as usual, if you guys have a chance and can leave us a review on whatever podcasting platform you listen to the show, that's a super help to us, and we would definitely appreciate it. Also, don't forget, we have the Pop Culture Cormdale Perpetual After Party, one of the few good reasons to remain on Facebook, and we'd love to see you drop in there and give us a shout. Talk to us about whatever it is you have on your mind, something you're interested in watching, something you've watched that seems needful of Christian conversation, feedback you want to give about the show, whatever it is, we'd love to hear from you. All right. Well, on behalf of the absentee Jared Moore, I am Jeff Wright, and this has been the Pop Culture Cormdale podcast. Before we go, let me remind you to live every moment as if you are before the face of God, because you are. Talk to you next time.